The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We are going to go some different directions on today's show, some things that I've been wanting to get into. One involves Major League Baseball and the idea of a clock, pitch clock, and some other rule changes that they are considering for next week. Pedro Gomez will be with us a little bit later on in the show. Talks about some of the changes, the Diamondbacks camp, why has there been this logjam of waiting. Obviously, we're going to get into quite a bit on Steve Wilks. We've done so much of that, though, this week. There's other things that I'm interested in that I want to get to as well. Last night, I watched some of Trae Young at Oklahoma. Eric, you told me he was Steph Curry, and there was a play last night. Did you see any of the Oklahoma-Kansas game last night?
I did. I watched most of it. Really good game.
What did you the play where he came down the court, there was a slip screen, he pulls up, hits a three from about 35 feet out, and he was backing up as he hit the shot. It looked very much like Steph Curry. Do you remember that play?
I do. But I've seen him play all year, Brad. So it to me, I've seen him make – he made like 11 threes in a game this year, and he not only is a great scorer, but he just has a way of drawing so much attention that he makes everybody on that team way better than they probably are.
He's got some good players around him, though. It's not like he's by himself.
He does, but when you have to extend the defense out as far as these teams do, because he's a threat once he crosses half court, and he's clearly not afraid to shoot from wherever.
I like the fact that he has such great court vision, and he also has a quick shot. He has a really quick release. Like, somebody passes him the ball, he's immediately already in position to shoot. He's not having to hang on to it. And he was fun to watch last night. 25 points that were scored on less than 10 shots, too. That's the other thing. If you shoot, you score 25. Like, those of you that watch this show through the years, you know that I get all wound up about Carmelo Anthony when he says, I have my 28 points, and you look down, you shot it 25 times. I would hope you'd get 28 points.
But, Brad, I will mention that he's had some of those games where he's taken 32 shots to score 29 points. Last night was sort of the exception of the rule.
Oh, so I caught him on a good night.
Well, they've struggled. I mean, Oklahoma has lost a couple games, and when he doesn't play well, they don't play well.
Sure.
Imagine that. So, yeah.
But I liked that last night when I saw him. It was, wow, this guy's really efficient with his shooting, but he was very efficient in his court vision. He was great.
And Mitch Lightfoot is becoming a really nice player for Kansas. He's sort of finding his role, the former
Gilbert Christian
star.
When he was at Gilbert Christian and when he went to Kansas, I think we all were kind of like, wow, I think he's going to get punished there.
And he
did initially.
He's found a niche, and he plays quite a bit, and he's had some pretty big games for them.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I like seeing that. So I watched some of Oklahoma last night, and then I watched LeBron James. I was flipping back and forth. LeBron getting his 30,000th point. And then I watched some of the Celtics and Lakers last night, too. So I was really into basketball. I was wrestling dad yesterday afternoon. The 12-year-old or 13-year-old got pinned and then pinned. Got his first pin last night, which was fun as a wrestling dad. I'm becoming this sport that I don't get how wrestling goes. Like, they're walking up to each other asking him to wrestle. So yesterday was one of those matches. Like warm-up matches, I guess. But it was fun. I really am enjoying becoming a wrestling dad. We're going to just do nothing but wrestling on this show because of it. So, on Pedro's front, so like I said, I want to talk to you about the rule changes. But there's also the Barry Bonds thing that I'm going to get into with Pedro. So that's coming up here at about 10:35. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind and in the world of sports, what's on my head today, tonight, brought to you by as you watch this. We tape it live at 10 a.m., but you may be consuming this at 5 in the afternoon, 8 at night. It's the beauty of digital. It's brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, you've got to protect what matters most, guys, and that means life insurance. Have you thought it through if something were to happen to you today? Log on to Sagicor Now, get your free quote. Take care of family, take care of everybody around you, and protect what matters most. Do it at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor Now and their support. Our television show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. We have an hour's worth of airings tonight after the Suns game, and which should be around 7:30, 8 o'clock tonight. They play on the road at Indiana, and then again tonight at 11 o'clock and 11:30. So we appreciate our partnership with FSAZ. Great show this week. Okay, so let's go further into Steve Wilks. I said on the show yesterday, there's no reason to dislike this hire. There's no reason to sit there and say, wow, there was this candidate and they did not get this candidate. The fact they went on a defensive hire rather than offense in the past, it's just the way things went this time out. There was not an offensive mind in my view. Mike McCoy may end up being the offensive coordinator here. It would be fine. Mike McCoy as a head coach didn't work. Darrell Bevell may be the offensive coordinator here. That's fine with me. Because you can bring in whoever you want if you do not have a quarterback. And this organization has been putting it off and putting it off. And I'm happy to have – this is a full reset. Outside of Fitz's situation, I think he's coming back. That's my own view. And Larry will be out at the Open next Wednesday. He may be there Tuesday in the putting contest. But he's going to be there for sure Wednesday in the Pro-Am. So next Wednesday, Larry is going to either say – yes, I'm coming back, or, yeah, I just need some off-season. Eric, where do you think he's at on this one? Do you think next Wednesday we get a definitive answer out at a golf tournament that he's coming back or he's leaving?
No, I don't think so.
What do you think it is?
He'll maybe write something that'll be on, like, Players Tribune or something like that, or he might tell a national person.
Jim Trotter.
Probably. That, hey, I'm going to come back for another year. I fully expect him to be back.
But you don't think that next week he could just say, of course I'm coming back, and move on? If he's retiring, he's going to write it.
Didn't we go through this last year with Fitz right around the time of the Open?
The Open, yes.
Is that when he said he was coming back? I don't remember.
I don't recall either. But it wasn't a press conference, was it?
No.
There's not going to be any of that stuff.
He's going to do it just like Carson Palmer did. He's just going to announce.
See you later.
When he's retiring, he's just going to announce he's retiring.
So yesterday you were there. I was here doing our thing. So you were there with the Wilks press conference. In things with press conferences, we've seen them enough through the years. They're really nothing more than a rah-rah session and look at how great we are. Very seldom do you sit there at press conferences and say, well, this is a really bad hire. This really stinks. This really blows. I mean, did you come away with a feel about Steve Wilks yesterday as you were there watching him? Was it just the same old, let's win the room, and that's what PR does. Let's win the room. We win the press conference. Everybody writes and says, this is great, and we move on.
Well, he definitely won the room.
In what way? Tell me how that.
I just think that.
Because you're pretty persnickety, you know.
Is that a word?
You're persnickety.
I mean, he just spoke with authority. He spoke like a leader. He spoke like someone who is ready to step in to be a full-time head coach. Like when Bruce Arians took over, it was the same deal. It's just a little bit, the personalities are different, but the message, I think, is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke yesterday. I have a clip I'll play here real quick that kind of just caught my attention that sort of sums up how he is and what to expect as the Cardinal coach.
All right.
We want to establish a culture of winning. And I want that culture to transcend not only with the players and the coaches, but with everybody in this organization. You know, it's about a commitment to excellence. And everything that we do is going to be predicated towards that. Excellence when we go out on the field, the way we tackle, the way we block, the way we catch, the way we cook the food, all right? The way we operate in the training room, the way we answer the phone, and the way we cut the grass.
Okay, that was Steve Keim at the end of there. Okay, so, but I would have to retort to you on this. What do you think he's going to say, Eric? We are going to come here and we're going to be mediocre. Of course he's not going to say that. We are going to come here and we're going to let the grass grow. We're not going to have great food. We're going to have cold. What's he going to say?
But we can only go off of what we hear because,
sure.
I mean, 2 weeks ago, did you even know who Steve Wilks was? I didn't.
I saw a name and I saw his position.
It's not like they hired Mike McCoy or someone who at least we're familiar with or who has been a head coach.
Sure.
So yesterday, seeing him and hearing him, I can only go off of what I heard yesterday, and I thought he did fine. I mean, he's a defensive mind. He's a successful successful secondary coach. He's experienced, and I can only go by Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell's recent resumes when it comes to hiring head coaches.
And I agree with you there.
They hit a home run with the Arians, and if this is their guy, then I just trust that this is their guy.
Would you say they hit a home run with Wiz?
Yes.
Because he got in the Super Bowl, but didn't he do it with some of Denny's, mostly Denny's?
Sure, but Wiz changed the culture of a franchise that had been downtrodden for years. And I mean, people are going to remember the end of Wiz's era. They're not really going to remember the beginning and the crescendo and getting them to the Super Bowl and just sort of turning around the fortunes of the entire franchise. And Arians built off of, obviously, some of the things that Wiz did. So.
And Steve Wilks will build off of some of the things. I don't think that Wilks inherits near the roster that that Arians did. That's obvious.
Well, starting with the quarterback, of course.
It's obvious.
There's no quarterback.
It's obvious, but the running back, Arians did not have the running back that ended up being here. That was a mishmash of guys. But we'll talk about more about this on the other side because I'm up against it. Pedro in about 15 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Welcome back in about 15 minutes. Pedro Gomez, actually about 13 minutes. Pedro Gomez will be with us to talk about rule changes in Major League Baseball that are being proposed next week to speed up the game like a pitch clock. And if this, in fact, is going to happen, visits to the mound, all sorts of things. Also, J.D. Martinez, what's going on with the Diamondbacks, all with Pedro. That comes up at 10:35. Continuing the conversation about the hire yesterday of Steve Wilks. And his line about, Eric, he had the line that you were there yesterday about not a rebuild, it's a retool. And I would agree with that line. That was a line that caught me. You had the line earlier about everything in place. The line that caught me as I watched it back was, this is not a rebuild, it's a retool. Would you agree with him on that? In my space, I would agree with him on that, even though they don't have the quarterback.
And that's exactly, you just stole my thunder. I mean, you look around the NFC West, Brad, Seattle has a quarterback, the Rams have a quarterback, and now the 49ers have a quarterback.
We'll see if he'll stay.
Yeah, but on the surface, they've got a quarterback. So, I mean, the pieces are certainly in place. The Cardinals have been snake bitten by injuries. I mean, you lose David Johnson for nearly the entire season, mm-hmm. and they've had guys that have been, you know, they were shuffling guys in and out and off the IR and bringing guys off the street. So a fully healthy Cardinals team, I'd like to see how they compete, and I'm curious to see who the quarterback is next year.
You and I have had this discussion off the air and even on the air, but off the air too, that I felt like this thing needed a reboot. That this had gone stale with the Arians thing and Carson Palmer too. Do you think yesterday re-energized some fans?
I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if people know about Steve Wilks even after yesterday.
No, I agree with you. I think you're right.
That was just the first time that we've heard him speak and things like that. And he, like you said, he definitely said all the right things, but much like on LOI signing day, you know, when these coaches get up there, they have the greatest recruiting classes and these are all going to be great players and blah, 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 blah. We heard the song and dance yesterday, so we'll see.
The quarterback will either re-energize, no matter who they bring in at quarterback, it's going to re-energize the franchise.
I think so.
Because did you see Baker Mayfield's deal? I don't know why Baker Mayfield's doing this. Because I've already had people said he's another Johnny Manziel, and I've said I would take him on my team. Baker Mayfield is not sure he's going to play in the Senior Bowl. He got to the Senior Bowl late because his mother was ill, and now he's down there. He's on the roster for the North, but he's not sure he's going to play this weekend. And you just want to sometimes, dude, it doesn't take that much for you to go out on the field. Why would you not go out and play? Are you at a point now where agents are telling you you're only going to hurt your draft status? Like, we've seen this trend in college football where don't play in the bowl game because you may get hurt and it's going to hurt your draft status. Well, now we're going to see the you don't need to go play in the Senior Bowl. You don't need to run at the combine. You don't need to throw at the combine. You don't need to do anything other than just go train. And all this stuff in the offseason where they poke and prod and all that, they're going to eliminate that. It feels to me that in the last few years, we've seen more of an emphasis on get through with your college season, stay healthy if you know you're going to go pro, and then just show up to do maybe a pro day at your college and then go to the draft. There's kids that will go to the combine. There's players that will go to the combine, but it's not like it used to. And this is not old man stuff. Get off my lawn. This is just, we're seeing more and more players being pulled back. Don't do as much. Don't leave yourself out there for any risk or any chance. You know, go train. Like Christian Kirk, we had Christian Kirk on the TV show last night. We saw Christian this weekend, Eric and I did. And he looks great. He looks great. I'll play the interview back for you next week. We did 20 really good minutes with Christian Kirk on hiring an agent and working out and everything that goes on outside of football. And he went through the process and he played and put up good numbers this year, as best as possible, and not a very good team. And that's great. But when you have quarterbacks that are going to go out and work on the West Coast and may not throw at the combine, does it really help them at this point? Or you get to a point, too, where there's players saying, I don't need to go be seen at a combine. If I don't get drafted, I can go pick the place where I'm going to go. And I'm still going to make a team, and I'm still going to get paid. It's just this shift here. And I saw this Baker Mayfield story. Like, are you kidding me? What do you mean you're going to show up, and then you're not sure you're going to play? That doesn't work. The other thing someone ran by me yesterday, this is a friend whose opinion I really respect, who's in sports. And he sent me this note on Nick Saban versus Bill Belichick. With Belichick going to the Super Bowl and Saban winning in the way that he won and pulling his quarterback, who would you rather have? If you had to choose one coach over the other, and I hate doing barroom debates, but I thought this one was pretty interesting. Because if you look at the coach that's out there going into the Super Bowl, and you look at the coach down in Tuscaloosa, in my mind, it's pretty simple that one has a huge advantage over the other. Now, Eric, you're a college guy. You're a pro guy. You follow this stuff enough. If you had to choose Saban or Belichick, do you see one that has a decided advantage over the other one?
Yes. I would take Nick Saban.
Okay, so you would take Nick Saban. Do you think he has a decided advantage over Belichick?
I do.
In what way?
I would like to see Bill Belichick win without Tom Brady, much like I would like to see Phil Jackson win without Michael Jordan.
Okay, so I look at it and say that Saban has the advantage because Nick Saban can schedule Eastern Alabama Tech in the middle of November, and he can stack his schedule how he wants because he's Nick bleeping Saban. Nick Saban also can dictate who he decides to go recruit, right? It's a different deal than who you're drafting. Drafting is one thing because there are guys you would want to recruit, but they're all off the board. And so Saban, I think, has some built-in advantages where it's obvious to me that Belichick, you're right. The Belichick thing is you have Tom Brady. But Saban has some advantages that I think make it easier for him to win and to be as impressive rather than Belichick. Belichick's got to play a far more difficult schedule if we're just talking about their given sport. Alabama is going to schedule two or three teams that are really hard. You play in the NFL, even within your division. If you're in the SEC, you've got domes and you've got outdoor grass. If you're in the AFC East, you've got to go to Buffalo in the snow. You got to go to New York in the snow. You got to play in the elements. Nick Saban's got pretty easy. If I'm just breaking everything down, I think Belichick's got a harder road than Saban. Two different sports in terms of college player versus pro player. Same deal. Football, same. Supposedly the balls are pressurized the same, supposedly. So,
and to your point, Brad, I think even bad teams in the NFL have the capability of beating good teams. I know the Browns are probably the exception to the rule, but Alabama, when Alabama plays a directional school, there's really no chance that the directional school is going to beat Alabama.
The only reason why they're playing that game is the directional school is getting a huge check to fund their athletic
Correct.
Department. That
Correct.
Is the only reason.
But a bad Jets team, to your point,
Could
has
be.
The ability
yes.
to beat the Patriots.
So, you know, somebody brought this up to me. It was very smart thinking on their part because I looked at him like, well, let me think about this. You know, Saban, he said, yeah, but Saban can schedule whoever he wants every year. He can get out of a contract if he wants. Bill Belichick can't say, you know, boy, I really don't want to go play Pittsburgh this year. We'll write him a check and they'll go away. You can do that in the SEC. That happens in college football. All right, Pedro Gomez is next. We're going to talk some baseball, switch gears, some things that I've been sitting on for about a week because of all the Cardinal coaching news. It's good to time to bring Pedro on board and talk about the Hall of Fame votes, the pitch clock that is going to be implemented or not next week, and why are the Diamondbacks still stuck with all these players circling around? Like, are they going to be here or not? That's on the other side with Pedro Gomez. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as mentioned, I've been very much looking forward to visiting with Pedro Gomez. I ran into Pedro a couple of weeks ago in a shopping center, of all things, and I didn't want to bore him with baseball talk. It was just good to get a hug and get caught up with him. ESPN Baseball Insider and analyst. Yesterday, there was a meeting with the powers that be of Major League Baseball, with Tony Clark and Rob Manfred down in Tampa, and nothing really came out of it. There's this big underlying discussion of next week, though, a pitch clock and visits to the mound trying to be put into place in Major League Baseball. So let's start with that. What do you know about this, and do you believe this will happen?
Well, if Major League Baseball wants it to happen, it absolutely will, and that's because the collective bargaining agreement that they negotiated a year and a half ago contains a clause that says they will negotiate this topic for 1 year. If there is no resolution after 1 year, Major League Baseball can unilaterally implement any decision that they want without the approval of the Players Association. That was negotiated, believe it or not, into the current CBA, and for that reason, absolutely, I believe it is going to happen.
Okay, and so the details of this are 20-second pitch clock, right? Give me what you know.
Yeah, 20-second pitch count. Batter cannot step out of the batter's box. There will be a warning on the first failed attempt, so to speak. And after that, a pitcher will be, if he's not ready to throw the ball within 20 seconds, the batter will be awarded a ball. And if the batter is not ready after that first warning, the batter will have a strike placed on his count. It's going to be met with a lot of backlash. Mm-hmm. But like anything, I think all the players will eventually adjust, and they'll know, okay, these are the new rules. And look, I'm a baseball purist. You know that, Brad. Yep. I don't necessarily like this. But I know that when you have games lasting 3 hours and 10, 15, 3.5 hours, that's just too long. That's too long for the modern consumer. And it's got to be shortened up. And, there's no way around it. As much as I don't like it, I can see the reasons why it's being done.
Okay, so let's go back on this. The pitch clock, is this from the very first batter of the game, or is it when batters get on base that the pitch clock comes into play? I've heard it two different ways.
No, my understanding is it's going to be from pitch one.
Pitch one, that's 20 seconds. Every pitch has to be within 20 seconds. Okay.
Yep. As soon as the pitcher receives the ball back from the catcher, the clock starts again.
Okay, so the catcher could get up out of his stance, walk out towards the pitcher, say some things to him, lob the ball back high in the air, walk back behind home plate and be ready at like number 19, which means about 25 to 30. There's ways to fudge this, is what I'm getting at, right?
But my understanding is they're also going to limit the number of pitch visits to the mound, I should say. And if a catcher does walk out like that, that is considered one visit.
Mm.
And so if the catcher goes out again, there has to be a pitching change. So there are kind of, I don't know if you want to call them safety nets, that baseball has built in to try to eliminate what you're talking about.
Okay, and my understanding on that is 6 visits by the infielders during the course of a game.
Of a game, exactly. And the catcher is considered an infielder.
Okay, so 6 visits by the infield during a game are going to be allowed. But
are you going to eat those all up early in a game? I mean, that's a lot to not leave yourself. It's kind of like a football game where you want to save those timeouts for the end of a game.
Okay. In terms of mound visits then by pitching coach, manager, is that going to change or is this part of the 6?
No, my understanding is it's not going to change, that it will be, you'll still on the second visit by a pitching coach or a manager move has to be made. But, you know, this is all still fluid.
Okay.
And like I said, baseball and the Players Association agreed to baseball being allowed to unilaterally make any changes they want after that first year. Well, the first year of the current collective bargaining agreement is over. So now baseball can pretty much do whatever it wants, and the Players Association may object to no end, but it doesn't matter. It's collectively bargained that MLB can institute whatever changes it wants.
Okay, what type of pitcher is going to be bothered most by this? Obviously the one that's very deliberate and very slow, but are there some name pitchers that you're going to be interested to see how they handle this because they are known as being very deliberate? Is this more of an AL problem than an NL problem? Maybe break that down.
I think that the pitchers who will probably be most affected are kind of the ones with shorter tempers. A guy like a John Lackey, a John Lester. These are guys that I think will strongly object during the course of a game. But once a ball has been called to a batter, as much as that pitcher may object, I think he's going to realize, okay, I've got to, you know, get my stuff together here and abide by the new rules. But I wouldn't be surprised if there were some ejections early on mm-hmm. by some of the shorter tempered pitchers who are out there. And it's going to be a learning curve for everybody.
Okay, so
a good majority of pitchers have already gone through this because at AA and AAA, they have instituted a lot of these rules. So, you know, there's probably about at least half the pitchers in the league that have already kind of played under these rules. They should have less issues with it, but veteran pitchers, I think, are the ones that are going to probably have the biggest issues.
Talk with Pedro Gomez. This is all coming down next week. One way or another, and you're of the opinion it's coming, right?
I am. I think Fred fully understands, you know, the commissioner fully understands that games have to be shortened. You've got to try to get younger audiences interested in baseball. And as much as revenues have gone up to $10 billion a year now, you know, the average length of a game last year was 305, and that's the longest it's ever been. And you've got to get that number somehow under 245, closer to 230 if you can, because you're just not able to keep younger fans interested in a game that is taking that long.
Okay, one other question about this, and that is, pitchers on the mound, runners on first base, pitch clock, pitcher throws over to first base. What happens with the pitch clock?
I think it restarts at that point. You are still allowed to try to hold a runner on. So, yeah, there are ways to try to limit it, but you can't say you can only throw over, let's say, three times, because if he does that, the runner knows, okay, he's not allowed to throw anymore, mm-hmm. we can run. So that part you're not going to change. But, I think it's all part of the process of learning how
right.
to play under these rules, which are sure to be implemented. And it, like anything, there'll be, you know, some learning that goes on. And whatever rules we see in 2018, they may tweak them for 2019 if they find, okay, here's an issue that we didn't think about, and we've got to try to address this.
Really interesting stuff there. Okay, let's switch over to J.D. Martinez. So this is Scott Boros, who has got this log jam going on where he's not getting his players signed at this point. I think he's been using the term J.D. Kong Martinez. I mean, he's used all sorts of stuff. You deal with Scott Boros. So why is J.D. Martinez not signed with the Red Sox yet? And is there any truth at all to the Martinez camp strongly considering a one-year deal to stay in Arizona, from your understanding?
I mean, anything is possible. I think you want to try to maximize a great season like that in your final year of before free agency, mm-hmm. especially at his age. And that's the biggest thing. You know, in years past, we would see Manny Ramirez sign an 8-year, $160 million deal. Well, my understanding is that right now, what JD is looking at is about a 5-year, either $100 or $120 million deal. the size of the contracts from years past, as much as those were great for players, I think you're seeing a reduction in those. You're seeing teams that are very, very hesitant to go above 5 years for anyone. And it's a new way of thinking by front offices, and it's going to, again, it's hitting Scott Boras because Boras is not accustomed to this. And, you know, Boras right now has J.D. Martinez, he has Eric Hosmer, he has Mike Moustakas, he has Jake Arrieta, who are four of the top-end free agents, but they're all either in their 30s or very close to their 30s. And front offices have seen that numbers decline once a player gets into his 30s, and they're just unwilling to give the size of contracts that were once kind of a norm for these type of players.
He has Greg Holland, too. I mean, he's got, yeah. I mean, he's got some guys that are sitting out there that have really, here we are on the 24th day of January, this many big-name guys still sitting out there is just odd. I've never seen anything like it.
I've never seen anything like this, and we're only 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Right.
And by now, a lot of players, you know, want to get themselves going. And so right now, they're kind of on their own in terms of trying to get themselves going because they can't go to any big league camp and use the facilities. So it's very, very bizarre. And what it's doing is all the second and third tier free agents, those are the guys that are probably being hurt the hardest because, you know, you're not talking about the guys who are going to be making $20 million a year. You're talking about guys that are just looking for anything almost, $800,000, $1 million, $1.4 million, and they're not getting any bites. And teams are using the fact that the top of the food chain is holding up everything. And once those guys sign, then the dominoes start to fall. It's going to be a mad frenzy to sign all of these free agents during the course of a 10 or 15 day window.
One last question. I appreciate your time. It's about 45 seconds to a minute here. What do you make then out of Mike Hazen's off season? Is it an incomplete because they did try to trade Greinke from my understanding. They'd love to trade Greinke from my understanding. Yasmani gets popped for driving fast. Does that equate to get him out of here? I don't know, but you and I both know they want to get him out of here. What do you make out of the Diamondbacks off season to this point?
An incomplete is probably a good way to look at it. This is a team that, look, they found lightning in a bottle last season on a lot of different fronts, and every single one of them almost was a hit. And for that reason, they were able to win 93 games and get into the postseason, have a very successful season. But I think if you look at it objectively, thinking that all of those boxes are going to check off again in the coming season, you're probably not living in the real world. You're living in fantasy. They needed to upgrade in some areas, and they're just being held up by the fact that Greinke does have that $30-plus million a year contract for the next 3 years. And the fact that Yasmani Tomas is the second highest paid player on the roster and is due to make 13 or 14 million this year, but still has a good $45 million left on the next 3 years.
Wow.
You're not able to move a guy like that because he barely played last year.
Right.
He's got to prove that he has something. Otherwise you're eating the entire contract.
Stay well. See you down the road. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
There's Pedro Gomez with us. I think I like these changes. Just when I hear, and I'm not one that sits there and says, man, this game is taking forever unless it's Armando Human Rain Delay Reynoso back in the day. And there's certain guys that it's like, man, he's throwing tonight. I got to block out 345. Or if it's these brutal American League games where the DH is sitting there and they just take forever and ever and ever. And if you're an American League fan, that's your problem, okay? We'll step aside here. I'm going to get into some basketball stuff next, including why does anybody really think Devin Booker got snubbed? That's on the other side. Right, a few other things before we get out of here on a Wednesday. That was really good stuff with Pedro. If you missed any part of it, this repeats all day, all night here on sports360az.com. You can check it out at sports360az.com, the Brad Susmat Show. Those of you watching on AZ Central, repeats over on that side as well. We put this in a podcast. If you're out and about, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and anywhere you get podcasts. the Brad Sussmat Show, and you can just put this on while you're working out. I'm a podcast guy now. I don't listen to radio much at all. It's all there on podcasts. Suns, Indiana tonight. Devin Booker was not selected as one of the 24 best players in the NBA. He's not. You know, you live here in Phoenix, and you're going to grab onto a player because he's part of your team. And Paul George is better than Devin Booker. Chris Paul is better than Devin Booker. They deserve to be in the All-Star game. They didn't make the All-Star game. It's really not that hard. Not hating on Devin Booker, but he'll have his day and he'll have his time. It's outrageous that he, no, you're just a hometown honk. I got it. He's the best. No, he's not. He's a fine player on a brutal team. He's a fine player. But he's not Paul George and he's not Chris Paul. And those two got left off. Those two should be there. The Suns are in a spot where I talked about this a little bit yesterday. Eric, yesterday you were not here. You were at the press conference. So I got into this conversation about Kevin Love. And I'm going to get a little bit deeper into this. Are you content watching the Suns just do this year with their current cast of characters? Or are you at a point where they should finally try to go after somebody who's out there who's a veteran?
Man, we have this conversation every year.
And well, it'd be nice if May 27th, 2010 wasn't the last time they had a playoff game. It would be nice, but that is the last time.
Love how
the Suns had a playoff game. May 27th, 2010, the last time this stinking franchise had a playoff game.
Wow. May
27th. 2010.
2010.
We weren't even doing this yet.
Oh, we are all sort of...
You were on radio at like 1060, I think. I was at Channel 3 watching mindless stuff happen every day.
We're sort of held captive by whatever the higher-ups with the Suns want to do.
Well, I want the higher-ups to do something. Look at this. So Kevin Love, they're not happy with him.
Right.
Right?
The Cavaliers are just defensively such a mess.
They're so bad.
They're so bad. They lost again last night.
They're 2-10 since Christmas. But again, you know how I am about the regular season, the NBA.
I do.
It doesn't mean jack. They're laughing and scratching, and oh my gosh, they're falling apart. It's January 24th. The finals don't even begin for four more months. These guys are dragging through the regular season.
And that tells you the type of elite athletes these high-end NBA players and teams are,
yeah.
Where they really can just, I mean, you see it every year. Like you said, they just flip a switch. And when we get closer to the spring, you're going to see all the cream rise to the top.
And you know what? It's happening in the NFL. These games in September and October, they're just trying to stay healthy. It's like NFL training camp is now August and September. The quality of football is so bad. In September, it is. And anybody who tries to defend, it's just on the payroll for the league. That's it.
And I think the playoffs have really saved the NFL this year. I mean, there have been some really good playoff games.
Yes, there have
for
been.
The most part, the yes, NFL season was pretty nondescript, I would say, as a whole.
I mean, the NBA, I found myself last night interested in watching the Celtics and Lakers. It was fine. I wanted to see LeBron do his thing against San Antonio. But, Eric, here's the thing. So, Kawhi Leonard, he's not happy. I made some notes on this. Kawhi Leonard, right now, there's Kemba Walker, there's Kawhi Leonard, and there's Kevin Love. There's three players that you look at and say, okay, is Kemba Walker a star player? Is he any more than Devin Booker? Is Kemba Walker what the Suns are missing? The answer is no. Kemba Walker's not what they need. It's Kawhi. I would take Kawhi Leonard on my team and figure it out. But given the hatred between the Suns and the Spurs and Pop towards Robert and all the nonsense of the chicken thing that Robert did years ago, there's not a chance that would happen. So that leaves Kevin Love. Do you go back to Kevin Love again? I think I've been doing Kevin Love talk here for 3 years of let's consider something. But at some point, you have to make a decision that when these guys come up, let's go after them. Let's not just sit back and watch this team get its head kicked in again. They play Indiana tonight. I don't think I'm going to find my way to watch the game, but I might. I don't think I'm going to. All right, so that's what's going on tonight. Tomorrow night, it will be really interesting. Arizona and Colorado down in Tucson because Sean Miller and Tad Boyle don't like each other. There's hatred. I'll get into that tomorrow. Edwin Rodriguez is our chairman of the board today. He did not screw up. Eric Sorensen never screws up, senior executive vice president of everything. And we appreciate everybody that helps out with this show. Up next, it is Talk to the Lopes. Talk to the Lopes this week. We'll be on the women's golf team, and we'll get into that. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every Wednesday, we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics. Brad Sussmat on sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the audience over on that side. Love talking GCU on all facets, all sports. And this week, we focus in on women's golf and looking at the Lopes. The WAC tournament is in Phoenix this year. Lauren Gazecki, the golf coach at GCU. All right, so South Florida to Arizona. How did this happen in building this program, and how are things coming along for you?
It's been great. I absolutely love GCU. That transition from South Florida to Phoenix, Arizona has been amazing, just for recruiting-wise, golf-wise. Everything. It kind of just fit right into place. As soon as I came on my interview, I just knew this was something special. You know, everyone I met, all the way from the AD, all the way down to every single coach that I talked to, it's a unique and special place. So I'm loving it out here. The process has been great. We've had a great success with recruiting. We brought in a few people this year. We're bringing in a few next year from all over the world, all the way from Arizona to Samoa to Sweden to Thailand. So we're pretty lucky that way. It's been great.
Lauren Gazecki with us, the women's golf coach at Grand Canyon University. So the travel budget, when you met with President Mueller, was like, look, I need a travel budget here to go around the world and find golfers, right? And he said, no problem.
Definitely. President Mueller has been awesome. He's 100% on board. They, allow us to have every tool we need to succeed. So we're extremely lucky here.
I'm kind of having fun with you on that front because I know Brian would not.
Yep.
And Mr. Vaught would not do that as well. But in all seriousness, let's get into this. When you do decide, Lauren, mm-hmm. to go find talent for women's golf in college, where is your first stop? Is it the backyard? And if it is Arizona, do you go to Xavier? Do you go to Hamilton? Do you go to the golf schools? Where do you go find in-state golfers for GCU?
Arizona is a special place for golfers. Obviously, we have a golf course almost on every block here, so golf is not hard to find here. We have two girls, locals here, here from Arizona. So we're lucky on that front, but, anytime we can get an Arizona kid, that's something great for us. Every high school has shown some great competitors. Xavier obviously is top notch. They've, won quite a few states over the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
So they just kind of push out golfers, which is great. But there's also a lot of talent all over the state, all the way from Tucson to Phoenix, Flagstaff, all over the state. We're pretty lucky here.
Do you go to junior events to find your talent, or do you go to high school mm-hmm. events to find your talent, or is it a combination?
It's a combination. We travel everywhere. We will go watch any golfer. It doesn't matter what level. It could just be a 9-hole match all the way up to a state championship to a national event. We like to go find some talent.
Do you get the contact from the parents? Do you put your feelers out to coaches? And what I'm trying to get at is if somebody's watching mm-hmm. this as they do, and they're saying, I've got a 12-year-old who's killing it, how do I get to this coach? Do they go directly to you, or do they go through the grapevine and up to you? How does that process work?
We've had both. And also, if you're a great golfer and you're 12 years old, hopefully I've heard about you. So we'll keep our feelers out as well. We talk to a lot of swing coaches in the area, a lot of mm-hmm. high school coaches in the area, and they have a great idea of who's coming up. So if it's a 12-year-old, 14-year-old, and they're, making the way up the rankings, they'll reach out to us and keep us updated. And we'd love to have them on campus, show them around. Obviously, GCU is changing almost daily. So it's pretty cool to have a recruit come in 1 year, and then a year later they come back and they said that, you know, the campus has changed completely. It's a brand new place and they're loving it. So it's a great process.
My daughter went to GCU, and she said, GCU, Dad, when she graduated from GCU, she said, Dad, GCU stands for Grand Construction University, because that's what's going on here. And she said that lovingly. It wasn't a slight, but
right.
How young is too young to let you know that they have a talented kid?
That's a tough question. You know, we're dealing with that as our women's golf organization. We're trying to put some more rules down on place and prevent the, you know, sixth graders, seventh graders, eighth graders from coming on official visits or unofficial visits, just because it's so young. You know, I'm already out recruiting 2021s, 2022s, so it's tough. I think that's just kind of the way the business is going. But, you know, obviously things can change along the way. And we keep an open mind about that, but if anyone's interested in coming, you know, we'll always talk to them and see if it's the best option for both of us.
Okay, when you're recruiting someone, Lauren, to GCU, what is your message to them in getting them through? You're going to get a great education, and I'm going to help you get to the next level. Are those two things hand in hand as part of your pitch, or is it exclusively the academic side? And yes, we want you here to represent the university. You don't even talk about beyond college. How's that go for you in your recruiting pitch?
Definitely both. You know, we're Division I now, and the players we have coming in want to play professionally. So the only way we want to help that happen is if they get their education. So sometimes they can get their education in three and a half years, and then if they want to move on to post-grad or something like that. But, you know, our biggest just talking point is definitely education. It's always something you can fall back on just in case the LPGA doesn't work out, and, you know, I think that's pretty common for most universities. But other than that, we want to win some championships here. So it's education and golf, for sure.
Lauren Gazecki with us. And so, yeah, in that order, if you weren't Division I, would you be doing a different type of program? Meaning, come here and get your education and represent the school. You're not talking about the LPGA. I know you're Division I now, but if you weren't Division I, is it a different recruit?
I'm not really sure. I've always been Division I, so this is kind of the only thing I know. But I would assume, you know, it could be a little bit different, but even though we are Division I, it's definitely student athlete. The student comes first. So, I'd probably stay the same, both ways, if it was Division I or Division II.
How does it work for a college golf player to go practice, go play, because golf is not something you can go do in 30 minutes, and balance books and study, and then be in the weight room and develop as a person? How do you balance time management for a golf athlete?
It's pretty tough. So if you've ever played golf, you know, a round is not 4 hours. It can, you know, sometimes take a little longer, especially when we go to tournaments and we have 36 whole days. We're out there on the golf course for 10, you know, maybe 11 hours with them. So we stress time management. You know, we offer all the tools that they would need. You know, we have study hours, we have tutoring, all the normal things that universities have. But it's tough. We really try to focus in on how they're doing, you know, determine if they're stressed, if they're not stressed, and do everything we can to help them. But on the road, they bring their homework. They'll do quizzes or DQs online. So it's very common, and we'll do study hours when we get to a tournament or to a site, probably in the hotel lobby or something like that. But, you know, it's on them. It's a lot. We do workouts, practice, qualifying, travel, flying, driving, all that. So we're lucky here that our players take academics so seriously. So they do a fantastic job.
And you have the WAC tournament here this year, which I'm sure is an advantage for you. And that course, President Mueller actually got me on the course somehow, some way, and I didn't destroy it the very first week it was open. And he didn't invite me back, which is fine.
Thank you.
And Jesse didn't invite me back either, which is fine. I people say, what is your handicap, Brad? I said, my handicap is showing up. Okay, I'm 6'8". That's the way it goes. But to that point, it's the WAC tournament, in all seriousness, how much of an advantage is that? Not just to have it here, because that's obvious. Of course, it's an advantage. But when it comes to balancing the books and the life stuff in your biggest event of the year, having it on your home course, how big of a deal is that for you, Lauren?
It's a huge deal for us. We've actually played it quite a few times. We had the team go out there this summer before school started. So I think we have a good upper hand on it. The golf course kind of plays to our strengths, and obviously it's an Arizona course. We're used to those.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have that hometown feeling. So hopefully we can get some fans or parents out there to support us. But I do have a great feeling, and I think the girls do as well.
If you were to go through your players, your top three specifically, what does it look like right now?
Top three right now, we have our senior, Deanna Salvatore. She's been a leader for us, ranked 133rd in the country. So she's been playing well. And then second, it's a toss-up. We have Courtney Vogel or Siri Pachana. Both are young players for us, a sophomore and a freshman. And they just, the athletic ability and that competitive spirit between the three of them have really impacted our team. They, you know, helped us with our rankings, and they're going to continue, hopefully help us win a tournament and take that into WAC Championship and make postseason.
And how do you feel the season for WAC Championship? How does it look for you right now?
It's looking pretty good. I think, you know, probably the toughest competitor that we would have would be New Mexico State. They've won a few times in a row now, so they're obviously the ones that everyone's kind of out to beat. But other than that, you know, I think we can compete with them, and we're really looking forward to it.
Well, I appreciate the visit and the time. Thanks for coming on Talk to the Lopes. The next time we're together, I will not hack your name off the top. How's that for an agreement?
All right. That sounds great. Thank you for having me.
You got it, Lauren. Thanks. Lauren Gazecki there. I thought I had it. Happens. Lauren Gazecki, the head golf coach at GCU. And that is Talk to the Lopes for this week.